Fine.
Next item on the agenda is item number 10. Proposed amendments to regulations 4VAC 20-260. 4VAC 20-650, 720 to establish management measures for 2007-2008 oyster season. Thank you, Dr. Wilson. Yep. I've got one. Did he want to read that in the record himself, or does he just want that part of the record? Do you know?
It's part of the record.
Okay.
Yep. This is just comments from CBF that came in late since you had your briefing. You know, I got a good discussion last meeting on all that was discussed in the Blue Ribbon OSHA panel, and then a meeting between the OSHA Heritage Program that was reactivated to discuss some of the issues that were being that have been debated over the years on opening the Rappahannock. And what we try to do with the regulations for this fall was to capture as many of those recommendations as we could right off the first year. The biggest change was for us to consider starting to do our sanctuaries different, and to, especially for the mouth of the Rappahannock and for as many other areas as we could, instead of having the large area that was below the bridge be a sanctuary, above the bridge be an open harvest, to start intermixing the sanctuaries with the harvest areas, and to start, at least for the lower area that we've been battling over the longest, to divide them up into six areas and to rotate them with two areas open per year. And this it was just the map that we had for the concept of the idea, and we followed through that with some real areas. But just to point out that I don't have a pointer.
But this is the area that we'd always been arguing over,
and there are, yeah, okay. What we have is that this year we'll open up the first area in this region below the bridge, and the next year it'll be the second, and third year it'll be the third, and then the fourth year you come back to the first area again. We've also set an area up here in the middle of the river that actually is closed this year. It's an area 7, and we've concentrated all of our replenishment efforts in that area this year for the Rappahannock. At least everything we did with the Rappahannock, and we've moved seed into that area, as well as spat on shell, wild seed and spat on shell. And so that area is going to be entirely closed and waiting to see how that grows.
Mm-hmm.
And then above that area, you start again with this will be an area that's open, and this will be an area that's open, like, just like it has been. But this middle area is actually will be closed in this regulation because we're waiting for the seed plants to come on.
But going back to that, that's all of item 8, just the dash line is Rantong and only above it?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, I mean, the numbers are not right. They actually change in the regulation, but we kind of kept with that theme, and that there are, in this one, we had 8 in two areas, and we just changed the numbers so that this pair would be 8 and this would be 9 in your regulation, so that they were different. This just shows the what this lower Rappahannock area will look like, and we're going to be having permits, and I just wanted to show that this map that you see, with the help of the Coastal Program and Laura McKay's program at DEQ, we have laminated copies of maps that will go to each of the watermen. So they have all the points that you can see on here for their lat longs around the corners, and these will be setting some buoys. But this will be a closed area as an example. That little purple dot over there is a reef that's closed. But they'll have all the numbers that they'll have on their boat with their permit so they can see what areas to avoid. Same thing for this area in Area 6, which is the upper area that has been opened. Now, Area 1 is obviously the area that most of the interest is in because it's an area that hadn't been harvested for a good number of years. And just as a general statement, we had a very good season that people still remember in 2004 and 2000, 2005 because we had had spat sets in 2002 and we had survival because of rainfall in 2003 and 2004. And at least, not in historic terms, but in recent memory terms, we had some good harvests in those years. 2005, 6 started going down. 6, 7 went down some more. And this year will be much less than they've seen in any of these areas just because we're in a drought. We didn't have a spat set in those good years of survival in 2003, 4, and 5. We had a little bit of spat set in 2006, but they're not big enough to harvest this year. So just as a general statement, this year is not going to be a good year in Virginia for harvest. Probably half of last year, and last year was half of the year before. So we're going to be down at the bottom, and a lot of the, you know, the wishes for Area 1 are certainly not going to come true because there's just not that many orchards down there. It's a limited area, and it's what the number of bushels in that area is what's in there, and you can't make any more there than there are there. Now we're also going to be rotating the Potomac Tribs similarly, with Nomina open this year and the Coney Ocomico closed. And this year with our seed program, we've concentrated all our efforts in the Coney Ocomico. We had seed put in Nomina last year, so it's obvious that would be the only thing that would be open still at this time while we wait for the seed and the Coney Ocomico to grow, and hopefully one of those areas will be big enough for harvest for rotate into that area next year and then start moving the seed back into Nomina. We also wanted to start the rotation in Tangier Sound, and it's these areas in the Potomac Tribs are pretty understandable. And the Rappahannock area has been pretty understandable, but when you start looking at dividing up Tangier, and I think if you talk to the Tangier watermen, they agree that areas need to be rested up there. They're very much in support of that. But coming up with an idea to divide it in three is hard. It's more draconian to go to from 100% of your area to a third when you're not getting a new area that has something new that you can hope for will be better, even though it might not be any better. At least the thought is that you open up a virgin area and that it could be better. This was the design that I came up with for the replenishment meeting. This was a design that the waterman came up with after having that meeting. And it may be that, you know, we need some combination of the two, and it may be thinking about splitting it in half for the first year is a better alternative than going in the thirds, because the third is a very, very severe change. This was just a way to combine the two. But another thing the Blue Ribbon Panel asked for was to try to open as many seasons as possible at the same time. And basically all the areas of the state are scheduled to open October 1st, except for Seaside and Tangier. Had a long discussion about this in the fisheries, in the shellfish advisory group, back and forth on whether that was a good idea. And it just seems like for those people that on Tangier that have nothing else to do at that time of the year, that it makes sense to have a later season for them, so they can crab as late as they can crab and then go on into oystering after that's over. Seaside, we're recommending opening November 1st to January 31st. Same 3-month season as the other areas have, except for the seasiders really don't intermix with the people in the bay, so it's really no conflict. And in me talking to as many people as I could, they wanted to crab October and start oystering in November. And then the James is same beginning date, but it runs later in the seed area. Have set up the same bushel limit per card throughout all the harvest areas except for the hand pong areas of the James River and Seaside. 8 per commercial license. The other thing that was new and considered for the lower Rappahannock was, at least for that area, to, since we've been arguing over large oysters, the scientists think possibly...
We weren't arguing. We were having a scientific debate, please.
Well, we were debating over whether how important those oysters were, and the scientists feel like the big oysters are very important. They're showing some evidence of resistance that they wanted to keep them protected. And as a way of keeping them protected, we've added to the regulation, the coal limit regulation, that you've got to throw the oysters back if they're bigger than 4 1/4. Now, I'll get into it. We're going to also have a replenishment program that we may buy some of these back if you all desire. But as the coal limits are set now for those six rotation areas, you will throw the big oysters bigger than 4 1/4 back unless you sell them back to us. And we used our stock assessment that just shows how we arrived at the 4 1/4. We felt like it was reasonable to try to protect 30% of them if we could. Let 70% go into the marketplace. At the Shellfish Advisory Commission meeting, we got into a discussion on what gear type should be used for the lower Rappahannock. And it was the patentongers, oyster patentongers, have been requesting some area to staff for years now. That they said that always the Rappahannock had been a patentong river. When it got closed, they were kind of left out when we went into the hand scrapes. And would it be possible for this area to be the new area, the area from the bridge to the mouth, the area that hadn't been opened, to keep those deep water areas for patentongers? And there was a long debate in the meeting, and at least by consensus at the end, it seemed like everybody was agreeable that both sides have their arguments. Both sides, the patentongers say that the dredgers tear the bottom up. The dredgers say the patentongers tear the bottom up. We do know from looking back at what the bottom looked like in areas that have a higher amount of mud and have a lot of little mud hills or mud reefs, that such as Temple Bay, which is on the southern shore of the Rappahannock above the bridge, that when dredgers get in there, they don't call off on top of those. And as they're doing their circles, pretty much those little mud hills do disappear. And one of the arguments that the patent owner said is that those areas, those natural areas that develop, they can keep them there because they're stationary and they're putting the shells and small oysters right back on the same area. The patentong fishery is less efficient. It moves slower. It's easier to keep up with, and it's pretty much a lost fishery for us in Virginia, and at least at the end of the day, the group agreed to at least have the recommendation that lower area become a patentong area. I'm sure there'll be some debate over that today, but that was their thought process at the time. The other thoughts were that the mouth of Rappahannock is not as safe of a place for small boats that are trying to dredge with a hand scrape as above the bridge. So one of the reasons it had always been a patentong area, just because they could stand there with the tide and the winds and do better with patentongs and in bad weather than you could with other gear types. I don't know if we... Do you want to go into the replenishment part of this right now, or do you want to keep that separate and debate the seasons? The replenishment is kind of a different item because it's a buyback program, but do you want to go through all of it first?
Ms. McCroskey, just Jane in here, since it deals with procurement.
The only issue on procurement...
Do we need her here for this? No?
No, we don't need her.
Okay,
thank you. Only issue is that at the end, after we pass the regulation, we need to adopt the procurement methods. But you want to go through them all together?
whatever makes most coalescent sense. Okay. Go through them all together, just do it, and we'll have a...
Well, I mean, just before I forget, I mean, we do... Another thing that they're going to get with, there's going to be a permit for just these six areas in Rappahannock, and along with this map, we are providing them a coal stick that has both coal sizes. And as a way of protecting these big oysters, it was recommended that we have a buyback program that's a replenishment program that's separate from the harvest activities. If the waterman wants to participate, yes, all he has to do is fill out a W-9 form, tax form, and he can participate. And at the end of the day, he can save 3 bushels per card and bring them to the areas that we designate and mark as the area that they're going to put these big orchards in, which will be in a sanctuary. And with law enforcement's help, they will come to that area, take their 3 bushels of orchards bigger than 4 1/4, and spread them in those areas for us. We give them a 53, which is a normal orchard tax form as a receipt, and then they would mail it into us and get paid $25 a bushel.
And if they don't want to do that, they
don't
throw them overboard.
They don't have to. They just throw them overboard as they harvest. It's a voluntary program, and we'll buy them. We set $25 a bushel so that we didn't compete in the marketplace, but it's a fair price. A low market price, not a high market price, because we don't want to be competing to try to have people sell to us as opposed to selling to industry that needs the other oysters. There is one law enforcement issue that because this is a replenishment program, and this new coal method of having big orchards is somewhat problematic for the waterman having orchards on the bottom. The code says, at least for commercial harvest, you have to have your orchards loose on the bottom in a pile so that they can cull out of that pile randomly. For the replenishment program, we have suggested, and at least we hope to try this, is that they take those big orchards and they separate them and they put them in orange baskets, orange bushel baskets, nicely rounded, not slack baskets, so that they won't have their big orchards getting intermixed with their small orchards, because it's going to be a very stiff cull tolerance when you have a big orchard going into your little 4-quart tub that they have as their tolerance. If they get some of those big orchards in it, then they would very quickly become over the limit in their cull limits. So because of that, we want the ones that are going for replenishment to be set in baskets, be set aside, so they can easily, as soon as they come to the area, drop them overboard and then head on to port. I think that's most of the things. The last issue is just that we are changing 2 other regulations just by the fact that we're doing this. We had to change 260 because of that, the culling change, along with 720. And we're changing, there's been a lot of confusion on what VMRC means by sanctuaries. And so we had called our sanctuaries orchard management areas, and we've changed the regulation so it just says orchard sanctuary instead of the word orchard management areas. All of these regulations, because of the recommendations of the Blue Ribbon panel, have included a stiffer penalty than we have had before, where if they are caught with significant infractions, like being in these sanctuary areas or having these big orchards when they're not supposed to, at least for the lower Rappahannock, their permit would be pulled immediately, and that they would come before the commission at the next commission meeting for potential loss of their gear license. So the immediate response at least for the lower Rappahannock, will be that they'll lose their permit and be out of that area if they get caught in violation.
Okay.
Law enforcement, in a meeting with them, had the original regulation that we sent to you had the same time period for the lower Rappahannock as everywhere else. And they had requested that because of the difficulty in this replenishment program and being on station for everything, that that they would like that area to have a special time limit of from 7 a.m. to 1 p.m. as opposed to the rest of the areas, which would be sunrise till 2.
Oh, daylight saving time getting the way it is. Daylight saving time didn't go out until November the 4th now. So 7 o'clock is still kind of dark.
But it's still a relatively short
time frame
for a work day. The other thing that they had asked for is that for this area, these rotation areas where they're going to be this buyback program, then instead of the 3-month season, that you'd consider a 2-month season of just October to November.
Well, in that situation, the catch will probably dictate as to how productive it's getting to be or not be, right?
Right.
Well,
it's very likely that the catch will not last 2 months.
And if it does, we can discuss with law enforcement and others an emergency regulation, because I think in a situation such as that, you're dealing with economics, you're dealing with the fishery. I think.
Well, it's also possible that we could, for this replenisher program, we would like the commission to allow us to be as flexible as possible. If we see that we're, as an example, that we are getting bad measure or people are throwing shells in these orange baskets and trying to put it across to us, we may have to go back to having two piles on the floor so that they can be culled. At the same time, that we could stop the replenishment part of the program early if it wasn't cost effective and keep the regular season going the full 3 months.
Now, this is a program that's going to require a lot of trust on both that are involved. I mean, nothing upset me or bothered me any more than last December to sit here and be asked about the RAP, and we go through that. I mean, it was very troubling. Now we've got this program that relies on trust for a very valuable resource that we're not really sure exactly how plentiful it is, and it's going to take a lot of give and take and, you know, adherence to the regulations that are in the best interest of all involved. So that's kind of what I'm looking for.
We've had watermen work with us on these buyback programs, and generally they're very good at giving.
I've never known it to be a problem. Okay. Any questions for Jim before we open the public hearing in a minute?
I have one.
Ernie first, and then Mr. Bowden.
Yeah. Are you going to mark the sanctuary as better? I mean, we have that one home. It's one sign. I've lived here all my life. I used to oyster there years ago. I have no idea how big that sanctuary is. Does it go all the way down one side? Does it go on both sides? Does it go to the state rocks on the end?
Yeah.
One sign really doesn't tell you much.
Well, yeah, these are going to be very marked well, and we've been trying to get more signs out on Seaside on those too. But they end up getting, those get pulled down on us a lot.
If we're going to revoke people's license, I want to know that they knew they were in violation beforehand. I have no problem with taking their license if they clearly go in a sanctuary.
I agree.
But I want them,
Yep, we have a lot of new signs are putting up. So.
Mr. Tankard.
Yes, sir. My question is the $25 for the bushel of oysters. It would seem to me that if we're asking for bigger oysters, that could take fewer to make a bushel of the bigger ones. So they might have a market greater you can take fewer to make a market basket. So maybe $25 isn't the correct price. It should be something higher. And then two, if we wanted to have them really participate and push trust, maybe we should be offering more for the bushel of oysters that we want to buy. But just two thoughts there.
Well, it works both ways. I mean, actually, you fill the basket quicker because the 30% are numbers of oysters. Volumetrically, it only takes about 120 of these big oysters to make a bushel.
Right.
So they'll fill those bushels very, very quick. With less effort. What we don't want to be in is this is going to be kind of an interesting year price-wise out in the open market, because there's a tremendous amount of oysters coming in from the Gulf of Mexico for the first time since Katrina. And right now they're coming in at around $25 a basket. So we don't want to get out ahead of the market and set prices. So 25 seemed to be a reasonable compromise for not making them tub them, let them put them on the boat. As they do it, they don't have to go through the tubbing procedures they'll have to do on the others. Where they come in loose, they got to shovel everyone and have them hoisted out. But it seemed like it was the best compromise. So we had started out at, you know, maybe $15 a bushel and ended up coming back up to $25. So.
Mr. Take any further?
Mr. Fine.
Mr. Bowden?
I think one of his concerns might be answered. This is in addition to their 8-bushel cost.
This is in addition, yeah. This is
going to be extra money.
This is extra money that they get three additional bushels of those after they've gotten their 8 per man. It's a different program.
Further questions this time? Okay. Thank you, Jim. I'd like to open the public hearing. Yes, sir.
Good morning.
I wish it was.
I wish it was, too.
My name is Lemuel Hart from Keller, and Mr. Chairman and board members. I have a petition with quite a few signatures, a petition with the return of the six-month oyster season for Virginia's Eastern Shore Seaside. Now, with hearing Mr. Wesson's comments, the six-month part's negotiable.
Thank you.
I was oystering on the seaside even before cards were issued in the early 90s. Before and for the first few years, it was always a six-month oyster season, October 1st through March 31st. When limits started being put on river and bay oysters, I believe the seaside of the Eastern Shore was lumped into this group unfairly. Seaside oysters aren't dredged or tongued like other oysters. They are hand-worked because of where they grow and how they grow. If you grow on rocks, but the majority are on flats, in guts, and in the marshes, they grow that way in the wild and in the rough. Because of this, in the larger area where they grow, overworking is impossible. We can't work Saturdays or Sundays. We can only hand-work on low water and with good weather. The cold and tide, the tide is wrong every other week, and we only average 3 to 4 days per week. With good reporting and a longer season, it seems like we could help boost the oyster industry. With the seaside, it's like Mr. Weston said, you know, the seaside is really a lot different and apart from the rivers and the places in the bay, and it's totally different. The seaside, the more an area is worked, the better it gets because of the way they grow. In other areas, it's not that way. It's the opposite. In other areas, you have to have replenishment. There is no replenishment on seaside. Anything they try to replenish basically doesn't do that good. It all does good on itself and by itself. And, I mean, as far as, you know, I always hear, well, we ask the crab potters. They want to start the oyster season when crab potting is over. Their season's 9 months. You know, right now we're looking at 3. Maybe we should be asked, you know, when we could start instead of asking someone with a 9-month season. You know, they've already got their things worked out and their vast majority of things, and we just basically want a fair shake. And also the 3 months that are proposed this year are November, December, January, which are the 3 coldest, worst months of the year. We have several markets, places that are really wanting the oysters and raw bars that want the oysters on October 1st. As Mr. Weston said, the oysters from Louisiana are coming in here. Oysters from other places are coming in here. So what do? We shorten seasons and we put a bunch of restrictions on it and wonder why it suffers. I disagree with a blanket cover for the state with slight difference. You know, that's like saying, you know, there's put the same weight oil in every engine. Every situation is different, and the seaside is definitely very different and very separate, like it's been pointed out. I'm not going to go for 6 months because I believe that's over the top. It's suggested 3 months right now, and I'd like to ask for a 4-month season. October 1st through January 31st, just like it was last year. Now, last year it was originally October 1st through December 31st, and my associate Harry Johnson and I came over here, and this board graciously extended the seaside season for 1 month. Then that 30-day extension, we worked 9 days. That's the point I'm getting at. We're not in boat strudging. We're not tonguing. We don't work the man hours that these other places do. And furthermore, we're put on restrictions and have been for years for depleted areas when it doesn't apply to Seaside. And I just think it's very unfair, and I think we at least need a four-month season.
Okay. Thank you. You have a petition? Did you have a petition you wanted to present?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you very much. Good day. Russell? Nope. Where'd Russell go? No, you're next. I thought Russell had his hand up. Must have been.
I'm Roger Park from Virginia Waterman Association.
Roger.
I don't think we're getting a fair shake out of this. Taking a hour from us the mornings in a month of December. And years before crabbing season people's had. And years the taxes and Christmas coming around. And what in the world are people going to do if we can't work? Man, this is awful to have to be done like this. I think you should look it over and do something. We can't go on like this.
All right. Thank you. Zach, yes, sir.
My name's Diane Dowley from Tangier Waterman Association, and you know, as Jim said, for our bunch, you know, we are in favor of some rotation, but just not in, you know, in our, I mean, rotation needs to be done in moderation. I don't think, because I'm going to take you down a few years down the road, and right now we'll just use the places that's being thirded up. That third is going to get pounded and pounded and pounded because there's nowhere else to go. Most times, as Mr. Bowman said before, rocks will close their, I think he said it, I might be paraphrasing, the cats will determine where you go. You know, you're not going to go here if you can do better over there, and that place will get rested. I don't agree with the thirding up. Another thing that you're going to have a problem with is that 3 years down the road, after this place has been pounded day in and day out, that you're going to have our area, you're going to have the Rappahannock boys, you're going to have the Potomac boys screaming for seed. And as we all know, we don't get seed every year. Since 2001, I might be wrong on this, Jim could probably correct me, I think 2 years since 2001, maybe three, has been a seeding program. And that's not going to replace the pounding that's going to take place in that third. But you know what we'll hear? You know what we'll hear in that third year? Overworked.
Well, Dan, let me ask you this. Not to steal your thunder cut out. Jim seemed to me a little bit amenable to splitting it in half, unless I misunderstood.
He did.
Is that getting closer to, I mean, did he represent?
Yeah, I mean, we talked earlier, the two places, I don't know what their real names is, according to the book, the two places, the Pocomo, that was plants, you know, we agree as association that needs to be closed. GM has talked about Thurfer and Kiley, am I right? And, you know, it's something, we can live with a rotation program, and we can live with Thurfer and Kiley. We got the sightings, like from the Quick Flasher to the number 8 Red Channel Beacon to Great Fox's Island. I don't know what the number, the Quick Flasher. I don't even know if there's a number on it. It might just be a red and green beacon.
Yeah. What he's saying is they're agreeable to having this large area and this large public ground closed. And those buoys, we got to locate them, but they're somewhere right in here.
Wandles in.
Somewhere along that line, so that above here, where it's been worked very heavily over the years, would be closed And then that would basically leave all of this and this up to that point open. So.
But I do want to stress how you'd rotate in this third program, because, I mean, even though our area, you know, we don't have a new area, you know, like below the bridge. It hasn't been working years. I think Nyancock and Parker's, but Parker's ain't never produced oysters. I mean, that's where we've got man 80 years old said it's only been oysters on that one time. I mean, even in the glory days of oystering. And Nyancock, just one rock, it's not going to hold up to 28. It's 18 of us, and I'd say, I don't know, this is just a guess on the Eastern Shoreman, 15. I don't know, really. But I advise you strongly on how you manage this third. I mean, I can't stress that enough, because, like I said, what's going to be heard down to Yeet Road is overworked, or maybe even Dermo, MSX. But the only one I'll ever hear and I've ever heard say mismanagement was Dougie. So I just stress, watch how you a rotation can, rotation is a fine way to go. I mean, I think, you know, we're in agreement with it, but it just needs to be at a moderation, at a, you know, and I think that can come together, you know, with Jim and the local watermen. And I do have one question for Jim and his presentation, that and the three baskets that, you know, are being able to save. Just say once the 4 1/4s and over starts getting down and you can only catch, we'll just say, a half a day. Do you have to go sell that half, or can you wait until that bushel's full?
We don't want any oysters sitting on the boat overnight. So you would, law enforcement, we've agreed in-house that you can sell in half bushel increments. So you can sell a half a day, or, but if it's less than a half, you just fish them on board.
All right, that was just my question. So I thank you for your time, and thank you for the chance to talk.
Thanks, Dan. Next. Yes, sir. And then you, sir.
Hi, my name is Leroy Turner. I'm from Gwynns Island. One of my questions is, on the three bushels that we're selling to the state, do we have to clean up spat off of them, or do they roll?
We don't want you killing spat that are on the ones that are going to be thrown back overboard. That's right. You would not have to clean them as much, but at the same, it's a very fine line that the waterman's going to have to walk between not throwing trash in there, but at the same time, it would defeat the purpose for it to kill the oysters on things that we're buying back. So, no, you wouldn't have to knock spat off. And you, again, it's a fine line.
That's the question. Is there a ticket there and a ticket in the pile, or if we're not cleaning them up? I mean, if they're
the pile has to be called normally.
Right, I understand that.
But the ones for a buyback, you know, we don't want you killing oysters in order for us to buy back oysters. So there'll be some reasonableness, but at the same time, we don't want people taking advantage of it. We'll be watching to see if that's a problem. If it's a problem, we'll have to make people clean them up. But if it's generally, when we've done big oyster buyback in the past, you know, if there was an oyster attached to them, that they just went. So.
All right. On the buyback, is there going to be a buy boat there to take them, or do we have to deliver them? And how far do we have to run?
Not far at all.
Okay. I mean, $2.75. We can't run too far.
As an example, for this area, you'd be putting them right here. Where, I mean, the boat's either going to be staying in Broad Creek, or they're going to be going up the river.
Right.
To top. There's nowhere to top over here. So you're going to have to come right by us in order to put your oysters over.
Okay.
So it's in your path to port.
And you said 7 to 1 time to work. That's only 6 hours. I've never heard of a man having a job who only works 6 hours. If he does, I'd like to get one.
Thinking about it.
It's hard for us to make it, like I said, $2.75 fuel and keeping the boat running on 6 hours a day.
We haven't passed the reg yet.
Okay. And if, I got one other question on that 7 to 1. Is that 30 minutes before 7 o'clock, so we're allowed to leave the dock at 6:30? Or because like you said, I mean, if we're tying up at Gwen's Island or tying at Kellum's, that's over a 30-minute run, no matter if it's slick cam or rough.
Yeah, you'd be able to leave earlier.
We'd be able to leave earlier.
We'd be able to start harvest or something.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Turner. Who's next? Yes, sir, come on.
You're hot. Turn the air conditioner up a little bit, please.
Yes, sir.
Your name, please, sir.
Croxton.
Mr. Croxton, good to see you.
All right.
What's your phone?
I've got some questions. It's been closed in there for like 20 years, and we took the Corps of Engineers down there last year, and everything's big as your hand. And if we got to sell the state back 3 bushels, and we can't save anything that's smaller, I mean, if we can't save any, we ain't going to be able to catch much in on a two-month season. We can't make a living on that. You know, you got families to support and all that. Hey, you know, that's going to be really tough. And it's going to put a lot of people
What do you suggest?
Well, a longer season. I mean, you could catch horses from 3 inches and up.
I think what we're trying to do in this specific situation is see exactly what was there since it hadn't been harvested in over 20 years, and I had to make a difficult decision on a tie vote last year and just before Christmas. So I think we're right now doing the best we can, what we've got to work with, to make sure that we allow the watermen to go in there. Well, of course, we haven't refined everything completely yet as far as the reg's concerned, to allow the watermen an opportunity to work in there, but not going overboard and depleting a very valuable resource. That's my concern.
Yes, sir, but if there's not much strike and they're all big oysters, we won't have nothing to work on, and it kind of...
Well, that's why we're trying to buy those big oysters so that we'll have some left over for years to come.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Croxton. I appreciate it.
Here.
Yes, sir. Anyone else? All right. Public hearing. Yes, sir.
I'm just Doug, and I'm going to slug it over to last, I guess.
Please don't. Unless you're, but if you're going to do it, both of you come up here at the same time.
All right. Come on, Doug. My name is Russell Gass.
Russell, good to see you.
Virginia Water Association.
Y'all are civil. Both of you come on up if you want to. I don't care.
You know, I've been a patong all my life. I ain't drudged much. I've drudged 1 or 2 years. And it's always been a patong area down below the bridge. And I would like to see it stay like that. In up Maryland, they got patong and up out, and they do well up out. There's more horses taken off that with patong area than any other area it is in Maryland. And it's just like Jim said, it's broken bottom out, and it's not room enough. If you have a rock down there, a little rock, where everybody gets on it, but 4 or 5 boats can drudge it. But if you put patongs on it, where everybody's not moving back and forth at all, you can probably get 15 or 20 on that area, where you're not running over top of everybody. And, you know, I would like just like to see it stay like it is.
When they had the shellfish, Jack, were you there or Jim? I heard something about a consensus. When they had the shellfish committee meeting, I asked a specific question after it was over with, what came out of there as far as the gear was concerned. What was the answer?
Well, the consensus was to stay with to have this area for patenting.
Okay. All right. I just want to make sure.
It wasn't a vote. It just was most of the
comments. Okay, go
ahead. Yeah, that's the way I like to see it stay, and then all the boys around home, around in Irvine, Whitestone, you know, down in that area.
Okay.
On the Rappahannock, we'd like to see it, you know, for that time.
All right.
Yeah, that's, you know, I appreciate it.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Jenkins. Mr. Jenkins comes as first in you, ma'am.
Commissioner Bolden, members of the board, thank you for this opportunity to express myself. I met and worked with the Oyster Herd for a number of meetings and also served on the Blue Ribbon Oyster Panel over the last year. During those discussions, patenting came up one time, and it was decided that those meetings that would be to open deep rock to harvest by patenting which is in the lower part of the Rappahannock near the bay. What was advertised and what was the handouts was given to us that the Rappahannock River Rotation System 1 and 6, the gear type was standard Arista hand crank. That's on page 2
mm-hmm.
of this. And that's what's been advertised. And I have petitions here of 120 signatures who Waterman has signed, and his statement is the underside rested Waterman requests VMRC to continue the method of harvesting oysters by a small hand dredge in the Rappahannock River, as they have been doing above the bridge and other areas through the state for the past 5 years. It has proven to be a successful way to cultivate the bottom while oysters are being harvested. And I heard Dr. Weston here say last spring that when they went back to Drummond Bar, that they were surprised to see how many living small oysters was there, half it being worked all year. A small 22-inch wide hand dredge is not going to damage any bottom that oysters grow on. The private planters have used that type in larger dredges for centuries. Would they damage their private bottoms that they've reshelled and spent a lot of money on if they thought it was that? What will damage is a pair of patent tongs that weighs about 100 pounds, where these little dredges don't weigh over 70, and they're towed with a rope. The loaded bridge that hasn't been worked 15 years needs a cleaning. And the only way you can clean that area is with a, and not damage the bottom, is use a small dredge. This will lift the toad blisters and the sponge grasses, and the tide will carry that on away from the oyster rock, and the shells will be turned over. The oysters will be harvested. Them will be getting what they want. They'll get the large oysters that they think that might have some type of resistance to disease on sanctuaries, which will benefit the river. And the oysters there that probably would die will be harvested, which will be, it's a plus, plus, plus for everyone. Patent tongs will not turn the bottom over and clean the shells up as a hand dredge, small hand dredge will. A lot of these boats in the last 5 years that's been working above the river and James River and other places, they're small. Waterman has adopted to small 22 and 20-foot Carolina scows because wooden boats is too expensive to keep up. And they cannot work a patent-on rig. It's too much heavy equipment and on there for them to work it. So these people that's been working the beds now for the past 5 years, they'll jeopardize their gear, and it's too late for them to rig up a gear now. But what's been advertised and what was presented to us at the Shellfish Advisory Committee was that the area rotation system, which I think I was instrumental in negotiating that. I know Laura Kay here is here, and so is Paula from NOAA. I think they vouch for that as well as Jim and Jack. So I hope you consider what you've advertised and what's best for the lower Rappahannock. I'm not going to fight with Russell. The last thing my wife said when I went in the door, said, "You and Russell behave yourself now. Y'all good friends." Well, I'm still good friends with Russell, whether he agrees with me or not. I've worked hard on this, and I hope that but to get the Rappahannock open on a rotation system, and I hope y'all graciously consider our remarks and you do best what's for the commission. But I want to represent my waterman, which is from all over the state, and I think if you just open for patent tonguing, is that it will be limit to a certain few, and our resources ought to be shared. Thank you.
Thank you. Made one comment about you and Russell. Y'all go home. Y'all won't be mad at each other. One of y'all will be mad at us. Thank you, Doug. We'll get over it. I know. Yes, ma'am. Mr. Jenkins.
Yes, sir, Mr. Commissioner.
How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Lionel Jenkins, for the record.
I'd like to make one comment about the gentleman. He asked a question. He was concerned about the size of the arches in the river. You know, I don't think he got his point across, you know. I didn't hear the answer that I wanted to hear. He was concerned that, you know, although we sell 3 bushels to the state, and I'm all for putting them in any kind of shape that you know that is necessary. But what if the majority of the arches there are 4 1/4 and up? So, you know, if we take a dredge full of arches and we had to throw back 40 or 50% of them because they're 4 1/4 and up, what we're going to do? You know, we only got going to have just a small margin of arches to keep. I think that's what he was trying to say. If the arches has grown to a size that they're going to, 3/4 of them are going to be 4 1/4 and up, that's going to only leave 25% to harvest. You see what I'm saying?
Yep. Dr. Wilson?
Yes.
You want to respond to that?
Yep, I can. That's that grant. And we've just gone and redone the Rappahannock.
Mm-hmm.
That's the green here is the area that you've not harvested in,
mm-hmm.
and that's percent. There's 31% of the orchards are bigger than 4.25.
31%.
69% are in the 3 to 4 1/4.
Okay. So we basically.
So and if you break that down, 8 bushels of clean coals to sell. For every 8, you should catch 3.
Okay.
So, because we didn't want you to be grinding one
All right.
for the other.
So, every 8, we're going to catch 3.
Right.
So, if we've got 3 men on the boat, we're going to catch 24 bushels. So, we're going to have 9 bushels.
That's right.
We're going to throw 6 bushels of big arches back.
No.
Yeah?
9 back.
No, it'll
we're
be about.
Sell the state 3 bushels.
No, you'll sell 3 per man.
Right.
So you'd
so you would sell 3 bushels per man?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, with your limits are equal.
I thought it was just 3 bushels
no.
per boat.
As long as you fill out a W-9 form so that we have a tax form for you.
Okay. Well, good. I'm glad I got it.
Thank you, Lionel.
Right. Yeah. All right. And one more thing. You know,
yes, sir.
Doug and I, we agree on the same thing here. I'm not trying to impose or to take away from any gear type. Because I'm all for the waterman, 100%, no matter what type of gear he's wearing. But I truly believe that the logical way to work this river is with the hands, with the power scrape, just like we did in James River and in the upper Rappahannock. Because, you know, I've watched Patton Thomas work, and I believe, you know, that if you were going to put it on a regular basis, would you want somebody to just rake your yard, or would you want somebody to dig a hole in it? And that's what patent tongs do. They go down, they lock, they come together, and they bring everything up. And when they get to the top, they're loaded with mud, cinders, and shells, and they wash them 2 or 3 times, and everything goes on the board. So that's my opinion of it, you know.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, ma'am. How are you today?
Fine, thank you.
Yes.
Paige Hogg, Urbana, Virginia, western side of the Rappahannock River, home of the Urbana Oyster Festival. On the issue that we're talking about, I think that the area should be open October through January so that Tangier and the Rappahannock are open at the same time. So that the fishery effort is spread throughout the state. On the matter of the orange basket versus the tub, the Virginia tub has always been the measure. It's in the code. You will take your oysters out in a tub. A Virginia tub is different than a Maryland tub on the sizes. So I propose that we take out in the tub so that everything is equal. The oysters that we're taking out that are 3 inches to 4 1/4 go through the tub, so do the 4 1/4 tub. The rounded measure on the top of this orange basket is unprecedented because it's always been a flat tub. You cannot put,
so what are you saying, Ms. Hall? Go ahead and put it in the tub person, dump it in the basket, and that,
yeah,
that's the acceptable measure?
Yeah, that would be the measure.
I tend to agree with you.
A round on this tub is not correct because a bucket of water doesn't carry around. An oyster tub is an oyster tub flat across the top. And that measure should be the same.
Mm-hmm.
If we don't catch anything out there, it's going to close itself. So the time frame of January through October through January, if we're not catching something in that area, we'll go over to the dredge area. If Tangier's not, it's going to work itself out. Now, I want a definition on this thing about the 3 bushels. And that, is that per man or per card on the boat?
Per permit.
Per permit. Now, if you have 3 cards on the boat and you have 3 permits on the boat,
you have 3 limits.
You have 9 bushels. Is that correct?
Or 24 of commercial.
Okay. Right. Okay. I want to. That's about all I had to say, other than I would like to see it be a Patentong area. Our Patentong guys maintain these big boats and haven't had a whole lot to work on, so it would give them some money to keep these boats up. We've got a fleet out there that's needing a lot of repairs, and it would help.
Thank you, ma'am. What else? Still like it.
Commissioner, members of the commission, I'm Tommy Leggett with the Chesapeake Bay Foundation.
And for the record, we have received your letter, sir. Thank you so much.
I'm going to summarize real
Absolutely.
Quick.
Absolutely.
We are in support of the staff recommendation. And while we're not favoring one gear type over the other, I think this will be an opportunity to answer some of the questions. Dredge versus Patentong from a resource management standpoint, both for the fishery and for the resource. Which is the better way to manage the resource? So this will probably be the only time in the near future where we can do that, because I believe once you do alter what's out there, you won't be able to come back and get this comparison. So from that standpoint, we support the staff recommendation. I think it's a fair compromise or agreement. There's a number of areas open at the same time, multiple gear types available, and a reasonable compromise at a time when our oyster resource is at a historic low.
Thank you, sir. What else?
I'm sorry, I forgot. 2 years ago, I received...
Mr. Turner for the river.
Leroy Turner. I received tickets on the James River, 22 of them exact. Everything was thrown out of court, but my license was taken from me, and I couldn't work for 2 months on private bottom. I heard him being stricter on tickets. This is the United States of America. You take my license to work, and everything's thrown out of court. You can't sue the state because the state's got all the time and all the money in the world.
Right.
Something's not fair there.
There's a process of appeal. Carl, do you want to?
I'm not sure what he's talking about.
I've tried all the appeals, and I've tried to hire a lawyer. But, I mean, if I'm down there working and somebody says that I was doing something wrong and everything was thrown out in court, but the BMRC has taken my license and I can't work anymore there, I was still guilty.
No, in this situation, what would happen is, yeah, you're right, you may be guilty at that point until the commission meets again. Commission can decide whether to reinstate your license or not. Courts don't reinstate or revoke licenses for seafood violations in the Commonwealth. The commission does.
Right.
So
I still couldn't have worked for that month, right, correct?
That would be correct. That would be correct.
So I was still guilty anyways.
Well, unfortunately, there's a lot of laws that are that way, such as DUI. You lose your permission to drive. You
don't lose them that night.
Absolutely, you do. Mm-hmm. Absolutely, you do. And they take the car that goes with it.
I mean, I don't see how. I mean, it's where I can't work, and I wasn't guilty. That's my thing.
Right. I understand. Thank you. Anyone else? All right. Jack, I'm a little unclear as far as some staff recommendations are concerned. The Patentong issue or whatever, I heard something about a consensus, something about that. Is there a staff recommendation on Patentong versus the dredge?
That's what we included in the regulation for you.
Was the Patentong aspect?
The Patentong for rotation area one.
Okay.
However, let me just add to that a little bit. Because the advisory panel met after this commission directed staff to advertise proposed changes to the regulation, and the issue of Patentong versus dredge did not come up until the advisory meeting, that was not advertised to the public, as as Doug has said. So if you wish to adopt a requirement for the use of a Patentong in the Rappahannock River, you'll have to do so by emergency regulation and then hold a public hearing next month to make it permanent. That's the only way you could do it.
All right, Mr. Counselor.
Yeah, I was looking for a copy of the notice and the materials we had, and we didn't have a copy
not
of the notice.
Not in there, but we did check that afternoon to verify that it was not.
Well, it wasn't advertised, and there wasn't the opportunity for public comment on that aspect of it.
Well, my next question is under 28.2.12.10, I believe. Does this come under the emergency regulation clause? Is this something that's covered under the two or three parameters of the emergency regulation clause?
That is a factual determination for the commission to make. If you determine that it's an emergency, then
it is.
What's the number?
I think it's 1210. 210, I'm sorry. 210.
Yeah, the commission would either determine whether the adoption of a regulation is necessary for the immediate preservation of the public peace, health, safety, and welfare, or the protection of the seafood industry, natural resources, or marine organisms. You can promulgate the necessary regulation. And it's a factual determination, and more often than not, entities which are given the authority to make emergency regulations are deferred to by the courts.
Okay, thank you.
But not always.
Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a few questions for Jim. Jim, you had a map up there earlier about the Tangier Pocomoke Sound area. And based on the testimony you heard from the Tangier watermen here, Can you draw for us a delineation that would, create an area?
It would be a line. These are the two rocks that would be closed on the Tangier Sound, and there would be a line from there's a red marker that's right in here that I'd have to get the number for, across to another marker that flashes, and this would be closed and everything northeast of that line would be closed, and all the rest would be open.
Okay, and so that
we could do that.
If you were to do that, that would allow the phasing in of a rotational model.
Or at least to find out how it looked. I mean, maybe this area will work with a 2-year rotation as opposed to, this area may flip flop back as opposed to a 3-year.
Okay.
I mean, some of the watermen up there claim that the growth rates are a whole lot better. That their market orchards are already from spat last year. We don't normally see that, but it may be that they easily could make it to market size in 2 years in that area, and so you would just flip-flop the area, and you'd rotate, but you'd rotate in twos instead of threes.
Right, because the rationale behind thirding an area would be to go through one ton.
Yeah, in the Rappahannock, we generally see it takes 2 full years to make it to market size, so you have to come in the third year.
But if we close this area this year and then left everything else open, that would allow the phasing in of a rotational model.
Well, you would start a rotation, but you start a two-year rotation instead of a three.
Okay, and a couple questions about the Patentongs. I mean, how many Patentongers, if we went into that area in the lower Rappahannock with just Patentongs, how many Patentongers would work in there, and how many do you have any projection or biomass estimate of market size oysters in there? I mean, do you have an expected harvest out of the area?
Can you give we have an expected harvest of about 3,000 bushels. In conversations, it appears that maybe 20 to 25 patent owners would gear up, as opposed to that we don't know on the hand scrapes. It could be as many as 60 or 80, like we saw in the James River.
Now, you've recommended to us as a staff recommendation that we adopt that area as a patentong area for this year. What kind of habitat concerns do you have relative to the gear, and do you give weight to the thought that we really would learn something from a management standpoint? How much value do you place on that?
I mean, I've had these discussions with Roger Mann, and I mean, we definitely lend weight to the fact that we would like to see how this debate plays out. We've always heard differences between the gear types. It appears to us that both gear types have a damage that is associated with them that's different. That each gear type has its own damage that are in its own signature, where the scrapes tend to be hard on the small areas because basically when the scrape is down on the hard area, they're culling off on areas that are mud and not on oyster rock, where the patentong would be staying directly over it, where the patentongers there's really no evidence, because I think people confuse between a clam tong and an orchard tong. It's been so long since people have seen the orchard tongs. Orchard tongs are just 100-pound max, but the clam tongs are much heavier with much longer teeth. So in that depth of water, a 100-pound device, they don't want to dig and take mud. They actually go down and pick up shells just like the dredge does. So I don't think they dig deep holes, but we won't know that until we've had time to look at it. So.
Okay, and a couple more questions, if I may. The Rappahannock season and the work hours, what you proposed is an October, November season, is that correct, or through December?
Well, we had originally had this season the same length as all the rest of them, October to December 31st, and law enforcement had requested shortening this season for this rotational area to just 2 months. So that was the blue copy that was added to your item this time.
Is that just for Area 6?
Just for Area 1 and 6.
1 and 6. And how quickly do you anticipate those oysters will be caught?
Depends on the gear type. If dredges, it'll probably be pretty much done in 2 weeks, and patentongs will probably last for a couple months.
Okay, and relative to the request for a six-month season on the seaside of the Eastern Shore, can you comment on seaside abundance or on that request?
Seaside is as depressed as anywhere else. I mean, I can certainly see it wouldn't bother me to have a four-month season, to have October included, but 6 months would be way, way too long for that area. We have not seen, I don't know if it's a reporting problem or what, but, you know, the numbers that they catch on seaside are very small year in and year out, and if things were doing so well, you'd think we would get above this 500 to 800 bushels per year for all of seaside, and so that's all we see reported.
Thank you.
Any other questions from the commission?
Yes.
Mr. Schick.
In respect to this consensus that was about using patent tongs, we've been talking for, you know, a year on this issue, and you know, this is the first that it come to the commission that, you know, patent tongs were even being considered. Now, is this a consensus of one group of people that came to one meeting, or is this a consensus that you feel that has been throughout the entire year, this oyster panel that we've put together? You know, the Blue Ribbon panel and the, you know, and the whole process.
Blue Ribbon panel didn't really get into gear types. Mm-hmm. We didn't really get to that, into that arena. So this was just that
you know, everybody's encouraged to come to these replenishment meetings, to the shellfish meetings, and they ended up having a contingent come to this one, you know, a silent minority that had been sitting out there quiet. And
any other questions? Thank you, Jim.
I mean, one, just sure, so it's on record that permit, you got to have it to go to work Monday, no matter which gear type we go to. And where you get those permits are our three law enforcement offices, either operations or the Gloucester office or the Heathsville office. Heathsville office has normal hours on Wednesday and Friday, and the Gloucester office is going to have a special opening. They're going to stay open all day this Friday for people to come to get to the to get their permits that they wanted. So they will have to have permit to start on Monday morning, no matter what gear type we choose.
Thank you. Let me make one comment pertaining to law enforcement aspect of it, being knowledgeable in that area. There are other fisheries that are going on at this time in these specific areas. We're mandated to do X number of inspections, and there's other, as I said, other things that need to be addressed. The gentleman made the comment about, well, you know, I don't know of anybody that works a six-hour day. Unfortunately, the Marine Police, as our other state law enforcement officers, guided and directed under the Fair Labor Standards Act, which, by virtue of a Supreme Court law, caps the number of hours that they can possibly work prior to overtime being paid. So it's not one of those situations from a law enforcement perspective where, you know, we just like to work banker's hours and walk away from there. So I just wanted to make that clear, because if it takes an hour to get on station, takes an hour to get off station, 6 hours during the working period of time, you're in 8 hours, and then if things don't work right, you're into a 9 or 10 hour day that has to be paid back in compensation time. So I just want to make sure that the people of the group understand that's probably, I would presume, where those numbers came from when they were floated. So it's
question.
Just a
question on that,
yes,
on that
sir.
Issue.
Yep.
That would be the working time for the waterman, or would that just be the time when the oysters would be bought back for the replenishment?
No, that'd be the working time. We've got the buying aspect of it is just a small aspect of the monitoring we've got to do. We've got to make sure. I mean, it's a lot of lines, a lot of patrol that needs to be done. We're not just there to manage the sale of the product. Where it's a lot of patrol that needs to be done, sectors to make sure that areas that are defined are not sanctuaries or management areas are not gone into. So it's a very labor intensive program.
How about in the rest of the state? Would the same hours apply?
All depends on what time the seasons that we add are. I mean, there would still be, you know, day in and day out, we manage clean cull areas. We manage polluted shellfish areas where people can be and can't be. And this, I think, Jim will tell you, that's because of the locale and because of the need to manage it so acutely, requires a significant amount of labor and manpower. And we've been planning on it for the last month or so. So I just want to make sure that it's understood that it's not like we need two boats out there just to control the sail. It's, you got to be on post, on perimeter, make sure they're not mistakenly going where they're not supposed to be. But at the same time, you know, I'm not so sure there might not be a little bit of flexibility in there. We knew how long the season was going to last. So, anyway, Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. While you're on the issue of law enforcement, you offered a detailed comment about tubbing the product before putting it in the basket.
Yep.
Can you clarify that for
me? Yeah, I think, Jack and Jim, I think you're talking about the plastic with like a closed basket type deal as far as the plastic, or what kind of plastic are you talking
just
about?
The open orange crab basket. It was a way to make, it's going to be very difficult. Waterman can't get tubs anymore. The only tubs are the buyers have them.
Okay.
So it's a way that they would have for our replenishment program to not tie their day up, make it easy for them to be setting those aside as they go. Then they know when to start throwing the big ones back over if there are some extra ones. rather than having two piles. Otherwise, we're going to have to keep two piles on the floor, and we have to figure out some way to tub them once they get to the sanctuary site.
Well, if we do that, then we're not going to actually be closely enforcing the volumetric measure of that specific item.
That's right.
Okay.
We're commission's making a decision to buy in orange baskets.
That's fine.
As a measure.
That's fine. Does that make sense?
Thank you.
Yep. Other questions? Matters before the commission for action.
I guess,
Mr.
Fox, a general comment. I was not here last week when they discussed the Blue Ribbon report, but I guess my trouble with the Blue Ribbon report comes across in Jim's first comment that we can't expect a great harvest this year, and I just hope that the Blue Ribbon report doesn't give a lot of hope, because it seems to me that we've talked a lot this afternoon about some things that I think are positive and things we should try, but seems to me three things are working, and we haven't talked about any of the three this afternoon, but three things that are working is one is aquaculture, and second is the use of triploids, and the third is the area of Kansas, and we haven't talked about any of those this afternoon, but that's okay. I'm just hoping that we haven't presented too much hope, that I'm afraid that when we find that there are not many oysters out there, it's going to be very discouraging, and that our whole discussion may have been not worth a whole lot. I'm sorry.
Okay. Mr. Bowden.
I have a comment on one thing. To change it now to Patentong area, you could have very well had a very large contingency of people that wanted to dredge if they knew that was going to be under consideration that night. You know, you had a group come there, and I've done both. I hope I never Patentong again, but I have done it. I don't think it would be right to change things. It wasn't a recommendation of the Blue Ribbon panel. People had a whole year to comment on things, and they come down to the last month and probably the last several weeks to change things. I just don't think it would be fair because it wasn't advertised. It wasn't done anything. So you may very well had people come today that had concerns if it had been advertised in the newspaper. And I really don't see how it would meet an emergency clause. So I wouldn't support that aspect of it.
Thank you, Mr. Bowden. Further comment? Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just several things. There's been a lot of great input into this discussion all along, but I would just say I appreciate what Jim's done in trying to phase in the rotational strategy for the Tangier area, and I think we ought to try to do that to soften the blow. In the Rappahannock, by contrast, we're opening a new area. So when you go breaking it down into six sub-areas, you're at least softening the blow somewhat because we're opening the new area. But there is no option to do that in the Tangier, in the Tangier Pocomoke Sound region. So I think the strategy has merit. I think we ought to pursue it, but I think we ought to ease into it. And I think what Jim has suggested with the input of the watermen is a good idea that we adopt that. I think as far as the season, I would be inclined to support staff's recommendation for the Rappahannock and go for October and November for the season for that area, given the fact that the harvest is expected to be completed within 2 to 4 weeks. It sounds like there are very few oysters to be caught in that area that's going to be open. I think Mr. Fox has tempered appropriately our expectations. It sounds like there will be roughly 3,000 bushels of oysters to be caught. As far as patentonging, I know that's one of the key questions today. I think there is management value and merit in trying to make some assessment of the impacts of the gears, particularly since there's been so much study in the Rappahannock and so much invested there. I think it'd be a great opportunity. However, I'm troubled by the fact that you know, it really wasn't advertised. And I'm inclined to agree with Mr. Bowden, given the fact that Dr. Wesson's indicated that each gear has impacts. They have distinct signatures, but they nonetheless have impacts. I don't think we can draw a distinction great enough between the gears based on the testimony we've heard today to justify an emergency order requiring the use of patent talk. I think it would have also alleviated some of the gold rush into that area. I think it had value for that, but regrettably it was not an option that was advertised for our consideration. So with that, I'd be inclined to support staff's recommendations, including the 7 a.m. to 1 p.m. workday in the Rappahannock that's been requested by law enforcement, and the seasons as specified by staff.
Mr. Robbins, you asked, just a follow-up, if I could, please. You asked the question, I think, pertaining to the seaside of the Eastern Shore, and Dr. Wesson indicated that he could support October. Would that be part of your motion as well?
Yes, sir. I would amend it to that.
Just as a point of clarification, not suggesting, I just make sure I want to say. Is there a second to the motion?
I'll second it.
Second by Mr. Bowden. Further discussion?
I have one question. As far as, I know we had talked about some type of possible limited entry, you know, into the Rappahannock area, and you know, that really hadn't been discussed, and I didn't know if we could maybe add on that, you know, to fish that area, you'd have to, you know, fish two out of the previous 5 years or something like that. That was brought up before.
Real fast, was that advertised?
Yes.
It was advertised.
If I may follow up on that, Mr. Chairman, I've explored that some with staff, and it would appear that logistically it wouldn't be feasible to, at this late date, given the fact that the season would open next week, to come up with a limited entry scheme and apply that to the issuance of licenses. And again, there's so few oysters in there, or if we take the estimate of 3,000 bushels, it's not going to last very long. But I would have also liked to have seen that controlled a little bit more, but again, I think we're moving forward with a good strategy in terms of the overall management of the Rappahannock system. And I would propose that we allow the use of hand scrapes in the lower Rappahannock. That is a departure from the staff recommendation.
So let me make sure I understand there. The motion, we are allowing hand scrapes or dredges, hand scrapes or patent tongs.
Mr. Chairman, the two do not work together. The two gears don't work together.
Just hand scrapes.
Just the hand scrapes.
Okay.
We would not be allowing patent tongs.
No, sir. Not at this juncture. Not as this, at this motion.
Not in this motion.
Yes, sir.
All right. And We
Rappahannock season, October to November, hand scrape, time of day 7 a.m. to 1 p.m., and adding October to the season on the seaside of the Eastern Shore. Have I missed anything?
And the Tangier
will be divided into two.
Tangier divided into two.
Right. And, as Jim outlined on the map.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Is there a second, Mr.?
May I, a point of discussion at this time, is that possible? When you look at it, the Regulation 28...
Oh, wait, I think...
We had a second, I believe, second, already.
Sir?
Did we have a second?
We haven't had a second yet.
Ernie,
second. I'm sorry. Thank you. Now we may have discussion. Thank you, Mr. Tankard.
That's all right. And this is only for discussion purposes only. You know, when you look at 28.2-210, it does mention in there that if an emergency adoption of a regulation is necessary, blah, 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 for the protection of seafood industry. And I just wonder if in some way, I don't know enough about the seafood industry in the Rappahannock River, if we may be protecting patent tongers if we push forward patent tonging in that area. Would that be, in fact, under the regulations of 28.2-210 advisable?
Still the same answer. It's a factual determination that the commission needs to make whether this satisfies the
requirement for an emergency regulation.
Point of discussion.
Yep.
Commissioner.
From a commissioner's, from chairman's perspective, I think that this specific section is to be used with restraint. I think it should be very strictly interpreted and not be used as a vehicle. And it doesn't matter to me one way or the other as far as the hands or patent tong, if that's been done. That's not the issue here. The issue here is protection of the seafood industry. If something catastrophic had occurred,
okay,
where we need to say now we need to close this, do that, or our industry is going to may not recover from it.
All right.
I think that's the intent, not toward any deference, toward any. You also have to remember that there's also a code section in here that we shall not discriminate against user groups either. So it's a lot of different things moving here right now. So.
Thank you.
You're quite welcome, sir. Motion made and seconded. Further discussion? All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Thank you all very much for...
And could you make one more motion on the procurement procedures,
yeah,
to adopt them?
So, go ahead, so moved, Mr. Chairman.
Motion made by Mr. Robbins, seconded by Mr. Fox. Further discussion?
Aye.
All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Next item on the agenda is... Not Tommy Leggett. We've already done with him. Where'd my agenda go? Go ahead. Thank you. Request for public hearing. General permit for temporary protective enclosure shellfish. Proposed regulation. Report of the ad hoc panel. Mr. Travelstead.
Mr. Commissioner.
We normally...
Request for public transportation.
Yes, you do. Just a second, Jack, if you would. Colonel Alderman or Colonel Rhodes? Can you arrange... for Mr. Green, Officer Green, to transport Mr. Bowden